Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are discussing why we need so many thumbs for Netflix, how far deepfake technology has come and how terrifying it might be, reviews of Duel, All the Old Knives, and Ambulance, and our topic this week is movie or TV heroes who are anything but heroic. Even a few of them are downright a-holes. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing tonight?
I'll let you know in about an hour and a half. And right. joining us tonight, because Amanda and Troy both could not be here this week, is Stan Dan. Can I call you Stan Daniel or just Stan the
sure.
Dan?
Call me whatever you want.
Okay.
Steve it is.
Can we call you Steve the whole time? Is that a problem?
You know what? It's better than dipshit, so run with it.
She touched my peppy, Steve.
I'm going to call him dipshit this whole time. So what's new with you, Stan? I mean, we know from previous episodes you are a doctor, which is great. Good for you for going to all that schooling. I did not do any of that, and here we are doing a podcast. So what's new with you?
Oh, very little. You know what? Actually, there's something huge. I got a new television. I haven't bought a new TV in 8 years, so it's like I'm watching television for the first time, so it's great. It's been a good week.
When you say new, how big are we talking? Like 75-inch or...?
65, you know, that's fits good. My room perfectly. I got the OLED, so it's a whole new experience.
That's very pretty. What did you have nice. Before? Did you have the old tube TV or what did you have?
You know, the big, 700-pound rear projection television. Oh, no, I had I think it was just an OLED. It was fine, but, finally stepped into the modern age and it's like a whole new world.
Is it a 4K or 8K?
It's just a 4K. I'm
don't say it's just a 4K like it's not a big deal.
They don't make anything in 8K. So
yeah, there's nothing in 8K, but 4K is fantastic.
They had the 8Ks on the display floor, and they, you know, I think they ask for your similar information when you apply for a mortgage to get one of those.
Yeah, I hear that.
How bad do you really want it? That's what I say. How bad?
You know what this is going to do to your for your life? You know how well this is going to appreciate? Not at all. In about when Christmas time hits, it's going to be $800.
Exactly. And plus 8K also won't be used for like 4 more years. So then the technology will be awesome and you'll still have the old version.
It was pretty incredible. I think I've spent less money on this 65-inch OLED than I did on, you know, my first flat screen, which was probably a 30-inch just sad little screen, but that was probably...
They've come way down over the years. I've got a buddy who bought, top of line OLED. It was like $3,000, $4,000 or something like that when it was all said and done for this TV. It doesn't look any better than mine. So, you know, every time I go over to his house, I'm just like, wow, you are dumb. And I hope he listens to this podcast because he knows who he is. You are dumb. You're just dumb. You wasted so much money, and that picture doesn't look anything but it. Unless people are coming out of the screen and touching me and combing my hair, whatever, I don't really need it. That's just a lot of money.
Sure.
Combing Do you actually want hair. People coming out of the screen and touching you?
If I'm paying that much money, yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'll be very specific about who they are and what they're doing, but yes, I would be okay with it. And everything just got really uncomfortable. So we're going to move on. I do want to say that Bad Boys for Wife and Slapgate are officially over. Will Smith was banned for 10 years from the Oscars. There we go. So let's get back to positivity and entertainment. Thanks, Andreas, by the way, for the movie poster. He made a poster for my joke, Bad Boys for Wife. It was great. Even had like a very, very faint Jada in the background. Very ominous. It was great. It was very, very clever. So thank you for
that. Yeah, that was pretty badass. I really dug it.
It was pretty brilliant. If you want to see it, you can go over to the Facebook group, and that was posted in there. Speaking of posters, so someone, I did want to mention this, because somebody in our Facebook group pointed out today how annoying it is when a poster has multiple leads on it, but the names over their heads are in the wrong order, and I kind of lost myself in this sadness of nodding agreeably, and I just want to know if I'm the only one that really annoys when they get the names. Like, they have Con Air and whatnot, and they have Nicolas Cage's name over somebody else, and they have John Malkovich's name over somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, the names don't match the actors.
Yeah, no, I get it. And it's stupid. That is absolutely stupid when they do that. But they, I don't know why they end up doing things like that. Maybe it's because, well, this is the composition of the picture that makes the most sense. But then again, you've got to like play connect, like the whole, that whole thing where you have to line the thing up, and it's crazy. It doesn't, as far as design aspect goes, it annoys the crap out of me.
That doesn't bother me too much. I have larger issues with most movie posters, that they're all basically the same these days. You know, you have a collection of actors and usually in some sort of pyramid shape. Movie posters used to be
art.
That's
how composition works.
Well, I get that, but they're all basically the same composition for every movie these days. And I kind of miss when they were a little more original.
Like Indiana Jones posters and Star Wars posters, and the artwork was really, Goonies is a great poster. Just like real, they put, you know what's going on from the poster.
It's funny you bring all those up, because I was about to say, it, like the era of Drew Struzan painted posters is the era of when movie posters were everything. Mm-hmm. And those who don't know who Drew Struzan is, he's the one who did the Star Wars posters, the Goonies posters, Police Academy posters. I mean, he. Oh, I love
that's my Police Academy impression. That's all I got. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, wow. I'm done.
No, continue. You're talking about Drew.
No, that's just so sad. I can't go any further.
Throw a machine gun.
So yeah, but Drew Struzan like was the epitome of what a great movie poster art became. Like they used to be all hand painted at one point, and I think when he retired, they said, "Okay, Photoshop it is, everybody, let's go."
Which is awful. And kind of like, you know, Sand's point is all the posters now are either that same collection that you're talking about, or it's one or two actors and just their face profile. And it doesn't tell me anything about the movie. I could see 12 Matt Damon posters, and the only one I'm going to know what the movie is if he's wearing an Asian outfit, because I know that's the Great Wall. Otherwise, it's all going to look the exact same.
Well, that one is a talented Mr. Ripley.
Damn it. That one gets me wrong every time. So I don't know. Just something that I thought was interesting, and it's really depressing to think of how sad our movie posters are, because it used to be you could look at the poster and I could tell you roughly what the movie was about from the poster, right? And you can't do that anymore, ever. All right. Well, we're going to move on to whatever the hell Netflix is doing. I really don't know what they're doing, because apparently they just added a while back they went away from how they were doing recommendations and whatever. So they went to a very simplified thumbs up, thumbs down. Well, now they added a double thumbs up. So I guess you can stick that thumb way up your ass, whatever, like double the thumbs up means that you love it. And according to a Netflix press release, they said, and I quote, "Consider double thumbs up as a way to fine tune your recommendations to see even more series or films influenced by what you love. A thumbs up still lets you let us know what you like. So you use this response to make similar recommendations, but a double thumbs up tells us what you loved and helps us get even more specific with your recommendations. For example, if you love Bridgerton, you might see even more shows or films starring the cast or from Shondaland." Oh, cool. So what do we think about the double thumbs up, and why don't we just have the star system like everybody else on the planet?
Didn't they used to have the star system?
Yes.
Like it was within the past 5 or 6 years, maybe a little longer, that they went to the thumbs up. And you know, I'm one of the three people that still have the Netflix DVD subscription, and Jesus, they still have the stars on that app. They never went to the thumbs up there.
Do you get discs? Like, you actually get them in the mail still?
I do.
Where did they go?
In that disc player that I have.
Where do they go?
Connected to my, to my new television.
I didn't know what his question. I didn't understand the question. Like, what do you mean, where do they go? Like, when he sends them back, do they just disappear?
Yeah. I just throw them to the dog and, you know, see what happens.
I honestly didn't know that they still had the DVD option.
You know, there's a few, it's the Blu-ray subscription. I think they have a few hundred thousand subscribers left, and I count myself amongst them.
Great. Well, have fun when you go to Blockbuster again next week or whatever the hell.
I wish. Oh, man.
Jesus. So what do you guys think? Are you a fan of I double thumbs upped it?
I don't know. I don't think, I don't think Netflix knows me any better than anything else ever does. I think the only thing that knows me pretty great out there is Amazon, and that's only because Amazon keeps on showing up in absolutely every single app I own. But I've tried to use the thumbs up and the thumbs down to kind of like help Netflix get more things to me. But I mean, overall, I still get really overwhelmed by what I'm seeing on the screen and eventually go, yeah, I'm not spending 45 minutes sifting through all this crap just to sit down and watch something. I'll just put it on, How I Met Your Mother for the 1,500th time.
God, man, you have a problem.
Well, it seems like the two thumbs up isn't necessarily love, but it's do you like it or do you like it? And so it's, I don't mind a little narrowing of the recommendations that you get. They're still going to push their big releases. So it's the smaller things that might find its way to me. I don't have a huge problem with it. I just don't know why they went away from a larger tiered rating system to a smaller tier. And now they're going back to a larger tier. Just can't seem to make up their minds.
Yeah, it kind of thumbs down the rating system. I like the like it, kind of like middle school. So it's like, yeah. She likes me. Oh, no, she likes me. Oh, all right, then that's different.
See, I've always heard, I like you, but I don't like you like you.
Well, that would be the thumbs down button. So that's going to be right. Coming next year. And then I guess we'll just call it the John button.
I'm going to have that tattooed on my back or something.
Jesus Christ. Way to pep it up there. All right, let's go to some other movie and TV news. I used to watch the show, but apparently many still do. Dancing with the Stars is moving from ABC to Disney Plus, and we're not going to talk much about Dancing with the Stars because I don't think any of us really care here on the podcast specifically about this move. But it does bring up an interesting discussion point. Is network TV and cable officially on the bubble of its own demise in favor of streaming? Now that we're taking network shows, this isn't the first one. SEAL Team did it on Paramount Plus, and a couple Evil did it. A lot more shows are doing this. Do you think this is the beginning of the end of network TV, finally, or officially?
I mean, we've been heading in that direction for the past decade. I think I've mentioned to you guys how I abandoned cable pretty early on as soon as I could stream the things that I wanted to see without commercials. So this, it feels more like the, just more the inevitable end of cable television as we know it. And it may have gone that way, but there's still a subset of the population that has trouble streaming or may not have great internet access. So that's probably the only reason that it's still out there, in my opinion.
I think the actual conversation as to whether or not cable television's on the bubbles when people actually started having conversations about bundling up Netflix and Disney Plus and all these other things. So you can bundle them up so you can pay for one thing as opposed to having all these different subscriptions. That's the bigger side of which I think it gets more convoluted as to whether or not cable's on its way out, because as soon as you can start easily making streaming available to people in a way that makes more sense, that's when you'll start seeing people dropping off a cable sooner.
Right, but I'm not specifically just saying cable. I'm saying, is this the end of network TV? This is the free option. I mean, people still can get network TV without having to pay for it. And these are network shows that Evil jumped, SEAL Team jumped. Now you've got Dancing with the Stars, which I granted it's been around for a long time, but still that's a staple. And now it's going to streaming. So I'm wondering if you think that maybe network TV is trying to say, we're not going to be doing this forever. We're going to go to a paid model. If you guys aren't going to watch us, we're going to go to a more paid model.
It does only make more sense. It really does. Especially the way in the viewing habits that people have today, where there's a lot more people who are more interested in getting out. There's a lot more people who are interested in watching things on their at their own pace versus watching things when they have to. So yeah, this is the start of it. It's really starting to catch hold.
And it may really come down to just internet access, because there are still pockets in the country where people don't have internet and still rely on an antenna signal to get a handful of networks. As long as they're able to generate ad revenue, even with a handful of people getting it that way, I think there'll be an option for network television. But how long that lasts remains to be seen.
Those are the same people that are also on your Netflix DVD plan, just so you know. Like, those are your homies.
They're my people. I feel for them.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Well, I want to talk about something that's really just kind of, I don't know if it's terrifying or what, but deepfakes. I want to talk about deepfakes. It's getting easier and easier to swap out actors in projects with deepfake technology. We've all seen it on the internet. They'll put a Tom Cruise in a different role. They put him in as Iron Man or something. And then Boba Fett recently just used it essentially to bring Luke Skywalker back to life. So how do you feel about this kind of technology? And is it a good thing that we can just replace actors and maybe actors that have passed away, maybe actors that are not young anymore, and bring them back to life?
I feel like we talked about this a couple times, especially when they brought Leia back to life for a couple of different things. And
not specifically like what we think about. I mean, yes, we talked about those specific incidents, but I mean in terms of just the overall technology and where it's going and how far we've come and how far we're going. To, are you concerned about this or do you love it?
I am concerned about it. Like, I don't, as somebody who has a design background, I find that there are things that set off my uncanny valley every now and again. So Luke Skywalker sets off my, on Boba Fett sets off my uncanny valley.
Explain what that is, because some people don't know what that means.
So uncanny valley is that thing that where something looks looks near enough to something you're familiar to, but it causes an internal fear mechanism. And or an internal mechanism in which you react negatively to it. So think about it this way. Somewhere along our development as a species, somebody built in this ability to be nearly afraid of something that looks kind of like us but really isn't like us. So which is an even scarier idea. So that's what Uncanny Valley is. Luke Skywalker sets it off for me. Actually, a good example is like zombies can set it off for some people. Robots that are wearing human skin can set it off for some people. That's what the sort of things that will can really affect your uncanny valley. To me, it's not going to ever really be something that's that perfect that they can get away with it 100%. In The Adam Project, granted, it's on Netflix, a great movie. It feels like a big blockbuster movie, but they didn't have all the budget to make it even look anywhere near perfect. So the de-aged version of the same actress looks kind of creepy on stage, so on screen. So yes, you're going to run into situations in which it looks better for some movies better than others. However, it's never going to be something where it is 100% for me.
Yeah, I think about it in, you know, the pros and the cons, and the only pros that I've had with this technology, the brief moments, you know, all in the Star Wars universe, the first time I saw Rogue One, and you know, I got the whiffs of nostalgia for the Peter Cushing, and the first time I saw Leia before I started looking at it a little more closely, and then in The Mandalorian, and it was just, you know, it was a kind of a nostalgic feeling. It was kind of nice, but the cons in what it can do on a political landscape, not to put too fine a point on it, I think is honestly terrifying. There's so many ways that misinformation is disseminated these days, and this is just another tool for that to happen. And I was actually just reading an article today about how there's actually people that are becoming addicted to misinformation, and this was in a, you know, medical magazine that I get, and
it's terrifying.
I do feel that this is sort of the next step in that, what I feel to be a significant problem in the world. So yeah,
after the last 2 years, Doc.
It terrifies me. Now, admittedly, I'm a little bit of a technophobe. You know, I'm still getting Netflix on Blu-ray, but I do worry about the technology and the possibilities. I think the risk outweighs the benefit.
What I find fascinating is so many people that I've talked to that are fans of whatever they're fans of, you know, Star Wars or whatever, they have no problem saying it's Luke Skywalker looked great in Boba Fett. They just rave. And I can't see that because I'm very much in John's camp where I saw it and I'm like, yeah, I don't like it. I mean, it looks good enough as long as he doesn't move. I mean, if he does any movement whatsoever, it's like CGI. That's CGI. And the voice never worked. So it's just like, you know, and I don't like anything that takes me out of a project. I don't like anything that takes me out of a project. Leia was still creepy when I saw her in Rogue One. She never looked cool. Peter Cushing looked better-ish, I guess. But no, actually, no. He kind of looked awful, too.
No.
None of them looked good. Looked they just didn't look good. Angel Paul Walker was terrifying, but they had the cool song that made you just feel like, oh, he's dead. That makes me sad. So it worked. But if you actually like take the song out of it or mute it, it's creepy because you know he's dead. You're watching that and he's just like rolling up in the car next to Vin Diesel like, hey, I'll see you next time. Like, no, you won't. You're dead, Paul Walker. And it's just like none of that stuff has worked for me and I can't see it and not be taken out of the moment. That said, the technology is getting progressively better. Every time I see it, it's a little better. Like Luke does look way better than Leia looked. Leia looked better than Peter Cushing looked, now that I can remember which chain of direction they came in. And I'm sure like it's going to come to a point where they can bring back Robin Williams in a project or something, or they can bring back George Carlin or something. You know, they're doing a documentary on George Carlin. Maybe they can make him look like he's still here and talking to us in some way. Like there's always technology always improves, right? Always gets better, never gets worse. So it's going to get to the point where it's going to fool even John, even a guy who knows the designs and whatnot. And that's the part that terrifies me just because of what Stan was just talking about. Misinformation, because we are full of people that don't believe in facts anymore. Like we just gave up. We're just like, nah, facts are dumb. They trust memes more than they trust data. And I don't understand that as long.
Or feelings. Don't forget feelings.
Oh my God.
Your feelings are more important.
Your feelings are more important. I mean, you can have an argument, whatever it is, movie argument. You've seen the movie. You've both seen the movie. We're at a point in the culture where I can say, you know, man, I can't believe when Luke shot the Death Star. Nah, Luke didn't do that. That was R2. Bitch, I saw it. And but there's somebody out there that has that argument that it was really R2. That we just didn't see what he was doing behind the scenes. And that's why the laser fire when it did, not the Force. Da 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 da. It's really not Luke. There's somebody out there who's making that case right now as we're talking. And somebody's going to believe that guy. So this terrifies me.
You just validated that person. I hope you feel good about yourself.
It terrifies me. And it really, really scares me in a real world level. Think about like murders and stuff. I mean, if you could rig a surveillance photo to look like, you know, once people get really good with technology, that's the kind of stuff that scares me. Somebody's getting framed for something horrible or something. I might watch too much true crime, but I'm just saying.
Well, there'd be whole, departments for, I mean, they already exist for the forensic analysis for such things that will break things down, but you're always going to have the subset of people that are like, well, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, how do they know? Just because I don't understand it, they surely can't understand it. So the real world applications, I think it worries me. And you talk about the improvements, and I think back to, Matrix Reloaded and the motion capture Keanu. And the first time, like most of the time when I see something the first time, I'm like, oh, that looks great. And on a rewatch, you're like, that looks pretty terrible.
yeah.
But you compare that, you know, 20 years ago to Luke and Leia and Peter Cushing and what's happening today, even with apps, you know, that people are using to do deep fakes. You know, it's not comparable. It's apples and oranges, and it's only going to get better to where it's going to be more and more difficult. And that uncanny valley gets smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did it a couple of those apps. So just to play around. First of all, you can, if I were Captain America, I would look just like Captain America. And then second of all, I actually make a pretty great Aquaman. Just saying.
Did you do it with the shirt off? Because
please say no.
It just captures the face. It's not.
No. Okay. God.
Thank you.
Yeah. God.
Yeah. Or whoever you believe in, or whatever omnipotent being you believe in. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Okay. I don't even know what to say after that. So nice segue. So yes, we all agree that deepfake is terrifying.
Indeed.
Okay. Well, we can move on. We can adjourn. You know what? Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. You can share your thoughts on this episode by emailing feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or you can actually leave us a voicemail, 818-814-6246. Our show is independently funded. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all content in your respective tier. Stan, he's a supporter. He supports us on Patreon because he cares about the bills that we have to pay. So thank you,
Stan. Damn right I do.
I appreciate that because we didn't go to med school. So it's you know, we need all the help we can get. If you want to help support the show, go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Although the more I think about it, you probably have so much debt from med school
that still paying off loans.
How many years does that go for? Like, if you don't mind me asking.
Oh, it's like probably a mortgage. It's just a 30-year repayment. So, yay.
Do you, when you make a payment, do you think, you know, that's, hey, I saved a life, like just to make yourself feel better about it? Because I would have to.
You know, I tell myself a lot of things to to make that pill go down a little more easily. So, yeah, it's a lot smaller than it was however long ago I graduated.
We're not going to go into numbers.
I forget these days.
All right, well, let's go into a couple spoiler-free reviews, and then we'll get to our topic. So the first movie is Ambulance.
All right, Aaron saw Ambulance, and Ambulance is the story of two robbers who've stolen an ambulance after their heist goes awry. This stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Yahya Abdul-Mateen, and Aiza Gonzalez, if I didn't butcher her name, and it's directed by Michael Bay. Aaron, what did you think of Ambulance?
I think it is the most Michael Bay thing that Michael has bayed in a long time. That's what I think. It is, it's fast cut. It's kind of absurd. The plot makes no sense. And it's fun throughout the entire movie. There's even a point where inside the movie Ambulance that Michael Bay directed, there's a joke about The Rock, which Michael Bay directed inside by his own characters. So inside of his movie, which to me says, you know, nobody... No, Michael's own Bay is himself. I mean, his closest person in the world is himself. He just loves himself so much. He threw a joke about his own movie into this movie. It's just it's a really weird meta bundle. But it's fun. Jake Gyllenhaal is hilarious. They never run out of gas. That's weird. But the movie is completely fun throughout, and you really start to enjoy these characters, and they're brothers. Mateen and Gyllenhaal are brothers. You'll see. It makes sense when you see. And they've grown up together. He needs money for his wife's surgery that's experimental. It's very expensive. So Gyllenhaal, of course, says, come on a heist with me. Come on. We'll get the money. And he's like, all right, shucks. We'll make it. It'll be fine. And of course, it's not, because it's the worst bank robbery ever. Not a single mask was worn. There was no escape plan, really. There's definitely no contingency plan for anything. And the whole reason that they're even in this mess is because a cop comes into the bank to ask out a teller. It's like the weirdest. The whole story is stupid, Stan, is what I'm trying to tell you. Like, the plot is dumb, but it's a very, very fun movie.
It sounds like a Michael Bay movie.
Exactly. Yes. It's Armageddon. It's The Rock. It's everything Michael Bay did before he did 27 Transformers movies.
Well, Aaron, if the $10 was the full price of admission, what would you give Ambulance?
I would give it $6, even though I enjoyed it a lot. And I think it's probably one you would rewatch and rewatch and rewatch. But the fact that nobody tries to cover their identity is just really annoying to me after a while. And Gyllenhaal, at one point, the cops were talking about him and they're saying he's this master bank robber. He's robbed like 30 some banks. Well, he's only like 30 some years old. So, I mean, how do you know that? He hasn't obviously spent all this time in jail because he's not that old. And he never covers his face at any point throughout the entire robbery. So I have a hard time getting past that. But the movie's fun. Go figure.
He probably got away with it with deepfakes.
There you go. That all comes back around. Okay. But I still recommend Ambulance is fun on the big screen, even though nobody went and saw it. Except me and Michael Bay. Because you know he saw it at least twice. Just to hear his own joke. All right, All the Old Knives is one that John saw. When the CIA discovers one of its agents leaked information that cost more than 100 people their lives, veteran operative Henry Pelham, played by Chris Pine, who doesn't pine for the pine, is assigned to root out the mole from among his former office mates at the agency's Vienna station. His investigation takes him from Austria to England to California, where he is reunited with his one-time colleague and ex-lover, Celia Harrison, played by Tantaway Newton. The pair are forced to blur the lines between profession and passion in this riveting tale of global conspiracy, moral ambiguity, and deadly betrayal. I am so confused what kind of story this is, John. Is this a romance, spy thriller, action? What?
God, I would have to say it is kind of a spy thriller with a little bit of a romance thrown in there, but it also feels a little bit like Romeo and Juliet. It's really interesting what they did with the story. It feels really fresh and new, even though you can find a lot of its roots in other stories like it. As far as a spy thriller goes, it's not very like spy thrillery. There's no like fast cuts or there's no give me the money. Nothing like that's happening at all.
Is there a guy smoking in a corner at some point? Because that's very spy heavy, you know, or an old man stroking a cat.
No old man stroking a cat, unless you count Lawrence Fishburne just doing Lawrence Fishburne things.
I would count that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's only in the movie for like 5 minutes, and you can tell that they sort of filmed this through COVID times because like one of the most popular.
Zoom in.
Well, there's the zoom in, and then on top of that, there's like one of the most popular restaurants in California is completely empty. They somehow got it completely empty. Absolutely no one's there at all. And that's where the movie takes place for the most part, because you sit there and you have both these characters just sitting down and having a conversation, and it occasionally cuts away to them remembering things.
So this is a story centered around spies or ex-lovers, and it's a very cliche-heavy kind of story. You said it felt kind of fresh and new, even though you've seen it before. What felt fresh and new about it, I guess, in terms of the story?
Well, the way they're delivering the story to you, it's a conversation between two people, and you in essence, it is really trying to solve a puzzle, and that puzzle gets laid out in front of you, and it has its own twists and turns to it. But again, it's like...
Is it like a stage play?
It's kind of like a stage play in a way.
Okay. Interesting. So how were the lead performances? Because these are two actors who never go wrong in my eyes. I mean, Tandaway Newton is just fantastic. If you've ever seen Westworld or anything else she's done, she was even great in Reminiscence, which unfortunately no one saw. Chris Pine
is
just one of the best. So how do they handle their leads?
There is for two people who are holding a movie that on their own, basically having a conversation, and the amount of emotion that has to go through that entire conversation with each other is incredible. There's so much love, so much respect, so much fear. All of it's happening all at once, and you can see the flashes of it happening as the conversation progresses. I think they're amazing. There's a reason why they're amazing. This movie exemplifies those reasons, and it does a really good job of conveying that.
Okay, $10 full price submission. What do you give All the Old Knives?
I'm going to give it $7.50.
Excellent. Sounds good. I want to check it out.
All right, Aaron, so you checked out Duel, and the story behind Duel is a woman opts for a cloning procedure after she receives terminal diagnosis, but when she recovers, her attempts to have her clone decommissioned fail, leading to a court-mandated duel to the death, which actually sounds like an incredible idea for a story. It stars Karen Gillian, Aaron Paul, Bella Cooley, and it is written and directed by Riley Stern. So... Aaron, I read that story out, and I kind of get this idea that this is something that would be a better short than anything else, but what do you think?
Well, I do think that, and it comes out April 15th, by the way, if you're hearing this before it comes out, just so you know, it comes out April 15th. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I think it works as a feature, and it's just the right length. It's only like an hour and a half, so it's the right length, but it's a really interesting idea, right? I mean, it's just like a really, really smart idea. The concept of if you find out that you're going to die, you find out you have a terminal illness or something like that, you can buy a replacement to live your life. So basically your loved ones don't have to grieve. And it's a way to try to comfort your family, your friends. And it's odd. And at the same time, I totally think people would go for this because people are really obsessed with grief, I think, in this country quite a bit. I mean, we just want people to live on in our hearts forever and whatnot. And this is a way to have them still live on in their hearts forever. So it's, it's a really weird concept. And it's awesome, very smart. Feels very Black Mirror in that respect. And it's from the director of The Art of Self-Defense, if you ever saw that, which is one of my favorite movies of recent years, just because it's so dark. It's a very dark comedy. And this is a very dark comedy, too.
Well, yeah, I was actually going to bring up the fact that this is the director of Faults and The Art of Self-Defense and now Duel. Do you think this is the sign of a director who's on his rise, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think Riley Stearns is a very, very clever filmmaker. I think he's very intelligent, and he directs. I mean, his movies are very sardonic. They're very kind of contemplative. They're very thoughtful in many ways. This is no difference. I mean, I don't like it as much as The Art of Self-Defense, but I still really enjoyed it, and it really made me think, and I'll take any movie that can make me think. I mean, you know, it drops existential topics to mind, like, do we overthink grief? I mean, I really started contemplating that after I saw the movie. I'm like, wow, this really brings to mind how we deal with grief in the world and how obsessed we are with the people that leave us. You know, instead of celebrating their memory, we're obsessed with the fact that they left. You know what I mean? So, you know, people tend to cling more on how they wish you would be rather than who you truly are. There's a lot of that that the film brings to mind. Of course, you know, what do you do if you've wasted every ounce of your life? Do you really deserve it? I mean, because what happens in the movie is that she's dying. Sarah is dying. Karen Gillan is dying. And there's no chance she'll live. So when she orders a replacement, she finds out that the replacement is actually better at her life than she is, which is crazy, right? You create a clone to take your spot. And even your mother is, you know, greets the clone more warmly than she does you. But in this world, only one Sarah can exist. So we find out that she has to duel her clone to the death because only one of them gets to live. They end up basically saying she has to fight for rights. The clone is basically suing. Sarah has to pay for her to live in this world until they actually do the duel. And then you've got Sarah hiring a trainer. He's played by Aaron Paul, which is funny because Aaron Paul's like 5'2", but he's actually a really good combat trainer. It's weird. And just the whole concept of the entire movie is so wild that I think only a director like Riley Stearns could pull it off.
That sounds actually pretty incredible. I can't wait to check it out. Anyhow, if $10 is a full price of admission, what would you give this one?
I would give this one $7. I think it's really interesting. It's insightful. Karen Gillan, I have to say, she's so dry in this. She's basically dust. I mean, she is so dry. And I love that about her, and I love how she plays the role. But you really have to like dark comedy. I mean, if you do not like dark comedy, like things that are just really, really dire, that are still funny, you're not going to like it, I don't think. But I love that stuff, and so it really works for me.
That sounds great. I can't wait to check it out.
Do so. So recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about. Stan, you went and saw something. I want to hear what you thought about it.
Oh, yeah. I went to see You Won't Be Alone with the... Oh, goodness. Okay. New film's got Noomi Rapace and a lot of people that you wouldn't recognize. It's set in... like 8th century Macedonia, it's more recent than that. It's in like 18th century Macedonia, but it is a film that is not for everyone. It is, if Terrence Malick directed The Witch, it is very slow and very contemplative. There are lots of beautiful shots of grass blowing in the wind. It is mostly told, the only... most of the dialogue is actually voiceovers in Macedonian, and it's very beautiful. But it's more like a tone poem. It's not one that I would recommend across the board. You know, if you like just looking at pretty scenes and thinking about what it means to be human on a very broad scale, then you might find this interesting, but it could put a lot of people to sleep. It essentially tells the tale of a witch who sort of inhabits different people's bodies, from grown women to older people to children to men, and just their experience as they sort of interact and are learning, again, what it is to be human. It's a very meandering narrative. I enjoyed it, but I tend to like movies like that. It's not one that I'm going to rewatch. And again, it's not something I'm going to recommend to everybody because it's not for everybody, but, it's worth checking out if you like, pretty art films.
It sounds like,
I like that tone poem. I like that.
Well, you know, I saw it in the theater, and I think it's a good one to see in the theater, not necessarily because it's big and loud and you want the experience, but it does keep you from looking at your phone, from getting distracted and, you know, checking on the dog. So it does, you know, it demands attention, but it's It's slow. It's deliberate.
You don't sound like you enjoyed it.
Like I said, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Oh, that's funny.
You're not really convincing me, man.
I'm not going to try to convince anybody to see this movie.
Is this one of those like you saw with your wife and she might listen to this podcast, so you have to give it all your stamp of approval? Yes, honey, I really like this. Because
if she ever finds out that you didn't like it.
We walked out and she's like, why did you want to go see this movie? And so I was the one leading the charge to go see this one.
Here was a perfect opportunity to blame her. Really.
Right. Yeah, I know. I commend you for taking the hit, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure you don't want to admit that you did not enjoy the movie in case she happens to hear this episode, and then she's going to be like, you son of a bitch, you made me sit there. No more movie choosing for you. That's it. I choose the movies from here on out. It's going to be Bridgerton, and it's going to be Kate Hudson all the time.
Oh, she has better taste than that. She did watch Bridgerton, and every time I would walk in, I'd see it on. Like, you're watching Bridgerton? She's like, oh, it's so bad. I'm like, why are you watching it? And it's probably like me watching Cobra Kai. So,
hey, you take that back. Don't you ever compare that sex romp to the brilliance that is Cobra Kai. The high art that is Cobra Kai. Just because so many people don't understand how brilliant Cobra Kai is, do not equate it to Bridgerton, ever.
Oh, I still watch it. I still watch
it. As you should.
And I hate myself a little bit more every time.
That's funny. I've heard a lot of people that have said that Bridgerton season 2 isn't as good because there isn't as much nookie. I'm like, oh, isn't it about a brother and sister in season 2? I mean, wouldn't it be just a little too weird if it was? I don't know how that works. I don't watch the show, but maybe I'm wrong. John, anything? Did you watch anything recently?
I recently watched The Adam Project, finally. That was a lot of fun.
It's a good one. Good one to recommend.
You brought up grief, and it reminded me there is actually, I watched Human Resources, the spinoff of Big Mouth, and I do recommend that wholeheartedly. It's,
is that a cartoon? Is that animated? Sorry, we
can't. It is animated. Yeah. It is animated, and it focuses on the hormone monsters and the emotions that drive us all. It's sort of a very, very crass and dirty version of Inside Out. But there's an episode that has grief that Henry Winkler voices, and it's wonderful. I do recommend Human Resources.
I love the breadth. Did I ever say that word right? Of your tastes and how far they run, like through a prairie of options, because you go from, well, this is a tone poem, to this is a naughty, dirty little animated slut propaganda show. I love it. It's just, they're so wide ranging. Your taste is so wide ranging.
Don't like to quarter myself.
I admire that. I appreciate it. Guys, open to new experiences. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. All right, our podcast topic this week revolves around movie or TV heroes who aren't that heroic. Which ones were commonly referred to by fans as heroes, or the ones we're supposed to be rooting for, do you think doesn't deserve the term hero, and why? That's what we're going to talk about. Now, we're not talking about anti-heroes. That's, I think, the important disclaimer we have to say. We're not talking about anti-heroes. There's a lot of guys out there that are supposed to be not really heroic, but are the lead. We're talking about people that are supposed to be the hero of their story and really aren't that great. Maybe they didn't actually save anybody. Maybe they really caused more damage than the villain did, or maybe they were constantly being bailed out by their friends at the Hogwarts. So that's where I'm going to start to get this conversation going. I'm going to start with Harry Potter, because that's my immediate go-to, because he doesn't do anything for 8 movies until the last movie. Then he finally shows up and then he's important. All he does is get bailed out by his friends. The rest of the movies, he's literally saved by everyone else. How is he the hero of that story? I just want to ask real quick.
He's good at Quidditch.
I guess that's it, right? That's all he ever really
that's
does.
That's all you need. Like he's the poor little orphan boy that everyone picked on before he got sent off to school. And at school, he became very popular because, you know, of the whole fact that the monster of the story chose him versus anybody else, which, you know, there's actually a bit that goes into the history of how Harry Potter became the chosen one, which is it's because Voldemort chose him. It could have gone either him or Neville Longbottom, and if you paid attention to Neville Longbottom throughout the whole story, he's somebody who's meek and scared of everything and kind of goofy, but yet he's the one who has done the more heroic things throughout the entirety of the story.
Hermione does way more than either one of those two combined.
Well, it's Hermione is on screen a lot more than Neville, but let's be fair. Neville's the one who's trying to like stand up to his friends or stand up to the more popular kids to try to keep him out of trouble. Neville's the one who eventually uses a sword to cut the head off the snake. I mean, there's a lot of things Neville did throughout peppered through the whole story where it's like he was the reason why, like the one little linchpin that kept the whole thing going.
Yeah, Neville Longbottom and the Sorcerer's Stone, or the Philosopher's Stone, whichever side of the pond you're on, doesn't really have the ring to it.
Right. No, it doesn't.
Sounds like John's house, Hufflepuff.
So, I think so.
I hate you people. But I get a cool badger for a house thing, so.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's always said that Hermione is the real hero of the story. Harry... You know, I loved Harry Potter. I loved the books. The movies were great. But it seemed like he could have been a lot more heroic if he would just talk to people. It seemed like every problem that they faced could have been solved easily if he just sort of opened his mouth and was honest from time to time with the people that he was friends and depending on. He got into his own way a lot more than a hero should.
Yeah. That's accurate. There's a lot of times where it's like, why aren't you saying anything? Use your words, Harry. Come on, man.
It's like you're right there. Just open your mouth. No.
Well, how many times would a whole movie be over if somebody would just say something out loud and then, oh, okay. Now I understand where you're coming from. There's really no conflict anymore. Have a nice day.
Right.
And
have a nice day. And then there's a 30-second episode of Harry Potter.
It was that. Tended to be the where the drama was drawn from in every book, and that was my biggest complaint about the books. And I loved them. I'm a fan. I read them a couple of times, but it always comes down to like, if you just talked, mm-hmm. just said those things that are in your head out loud, it'd be fine.
Now back to the topic at hand. Does it bother you guys? I mean, we're going to talk about specific ones, but does it bother you when you watch a movie and you're supposed to root for the hero, but you find yourself thinking the hero is either a failure as a hero or an idiot or something along those lines? Or can you still stay engaged with the movie, even though you don't think he's as heroic as everybody else thinks he is?
In thinking about this topic, I came to find that a lot of my favorite movies actually have this character.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll have to think about it a little more and see what that says about me. But yeah, it apparently doesn't bother me at all.
Well, in a lot of ways, that character is a lot more relatable than the actual hero, the actual person that has the valor and the strength to push through whatever situation they're being thrown at. The person who is the one who's haphazardly working their way through or being dragged along by their friends, that one's a lot easier to identify yourself as. I mean, just go back to high school when you had to do all those group projects. Who were you? Were you the guy who just did enough work to get past it, or were you the guy doing all the work? Chances are you're the one doing enough work.
I just didn't show up at class, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I don't know where that puts me in this, but that's where I was.
You get an F.
Truant. No, I got a 0. I never failed, because if you took the midterm and the final, you could still pass. So I always showed up on those days and did that and still passed. Ha ha. All right. Well, that's enough of my tragedy as a youth. So let's talk about our heroes. Now, each of us have 3 that we've picked. Maybe I've got actually a couple honorable mention or 2. But for movies or TV shows that just sucked at being heroic. And again, we're staying away from anti-heroes. We're going to do round robin, so we'll do one at a time, but we'll do it Stan, John, myself. And, you know, let's see who your heroes are and why you think they're not very heroic. Stan, you lead us off. Who's the first one, and then we'll discuss.
I think this one's kind of low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to start off with Frodo Baggins in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm. You know, Frodo, his one heroic move is doing the hard thing and you know, he's very reluctant in taking the ring and agreeing to carry it to Mordor. But pretty much after the first movie, even during the first movie, you know, he gets stabbed and he's carried around. He's constantly rescued by the other hobbits and Aragorn and the elves. And once he gets to Mordor, Sam essentially has to drag him to the mountain. And then when it comes down for him to shine, you know, he fails spectacularly. And I think that's it's one of my favorite movie moments is, you know, when it comes down to all he has to do is toss the ring and he's like, nope, it's mine. And I it's tragic, but I sort of love it. It's just great drama. But yeah, he's, you know, we were talking about the movie posters and he's front and center and he is not a very heroic hero.
And really, he carried the burden. Really, did you though? I mean, I guess one could argue that Sam used him as a suitcase, which is a great argument. Which is fine. No, you hold it. I'll get you there. Don't worry about it. I'll drag you up there. We'll get you there, Mr. Frodo. But on the same token, I'm like, he gets so much press for just, oh, Frodo, God bless you. You did a wonderful thing. You didn't do it. You wanted to give it away like 18 times. Really, Sam is the hero of that whole story. You're absolutely right. And he always looks heroic throughout the entire thing, where Frodo just looks like has no self-control whatsoever. He's obviously just like his uncle. No willpower. Good call.
None whatsoever. He falls into the swamp at even though Smeagol warns him against it. He abandons Sam. You know, he's kind of terrible.
He's really not good at this getting the ring to Mordor thing. Not very good at it.
Yeah, he was. I think one of my favorite things I've seen in a long time was like a picture of the Fellowship of the Rings, and it's like the Fellowship of the Rings at 10%, or I mean, sorry, at 100%, and it's got everybody in there. And then the next picture is everybody but Sam's in the picture, and it's like the Fellowship at 10%.
That's funny. Okay, so John, your turn. Who's your first hero that's not really a
hero? All right, so. All right, you can throw that in if you want or not, but I'm going to say Glenda the Good Witch in Wizard of Oz. And the reason why is because 100% of everything that happens to Dorothy throughout the entirety of that story is Glenda's fault. Mm-hmm. Glenda puts the shoes on Dorothy's feet. Glenda introduced, like, it puts her in a situation where she meets the Wicked Witch of the East. Wicked Witch sees that her sister's shoes are on this little girl's feet. And then from there on out, it's all hell on Dorothy. And it's all Glenda's fault.
And she could have left because she never tells her. Just click your heels 3 times. You can go, yeah. Bitch, why am I still here? I don't understand why you say that. As soon as you murdered the other witch, you directed that house. Like you directed traffic right on her head. Yeah, she was awful.
You know, why did I have to go through the whole story? Why was the monkeys? Why did the apple trees throw apples at me? This is freaking bullshit.
She basically used Dorothy as an assassin.
Yeah.
She did. Really did. Yeah.
She gaslit her, right? Is that the term? Like she gaslit her.
She Manchurian candidated her.
It's messed up, man. Family moving my ass. Jesus Christ.
Right.
That's a good one.
Freaking
like that.
Glenda and the freaking hanging midget in the tree. Like, come on.
Listen to the Dark Side of the Moon.
Right. Was midget okay?
Or hanging the little person?
There you go. All right.
Jeez, I don't know. I'm not the one that has to answer your emails. So it's fine.
I don't answer my emails.
Fair. Good call.
I lost connection to my email again. And I haven't even bothered to reconnect.
Boy, there's like 3 people that are very sad right now.
No, they're not.
There are a lot of people that were happy you were back last week. Stop it. My first one, speaking of low-hanging fruit, my God, this one's on the ground. Johnny Utah from Point Break, who is allegedly the hero of the movie. He's also like the worst and dumbest FBI agent to ever wear a badge. So here's why I say Johnny Utah is a hero that's not very heroic. First, he uses his real name undercover. Idiot. Immediately falls in love with the main bad guy because he's a bitch and surfer who teaches him life lessons and shit. Literally gets his partner killed, blows his cover by chasing after the bad guy, Bodhi, sacrifices the entire operation and his partner over a girl he just met that doesn't actually know who he really is, so probably doesn't give a shit about him, finally catches Bodhi at the end and allows him to go for a final surf after the guy just killed his partner when you know jail would be a far worse punishment for a guy that's a free spirit. he is the worst hero in film history.
But he looks cool shooting a gun into the air while lying on the beach.
That's
true.
Hey, also,
how'd I forget that?
The guy at the shooting range gave him a thumbs up, and you know that guy doesn't give anybody a thumbs up.
God, that was dumb. Oh my God. That's so funny. All right, Stan, we're back to you.
I feel like I need to make it a point to ruffle Aaron's feathers every time I come on. Oh, so my second pick is going to be Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oddly, I can see this one. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I totally see it too. Even though he is the central character, and you know he's Kurt Russell, he's supposed to be the hero. He is only trying to get his truck back. At no point until the very end,
or late.
Well. That actually kind of falls into the how he's not heroic, because it's really Wang Chi that is the hero. You know, he's trying to get his fiance back.
Agreed.
And he's the one that actually fights in the battle and doesn't knock himself out before the battle begins.
I love it.
And then at the end, you know, after Jack Burton does, you know, his one cool move, he's got great reflexes. He's given the opportunity to get the girl, and it's literally put on a, you know, it's just right there for him to make out with Kim Cattrall, and he walks away. So at no point is he the heroic character in Big Trouble in Little China.
You know, I would actually argue that whole walking away from Kim Cattrall was actually the most heroic thing he did.
He just saved her a life of disappointment.
Right. He just... you know, saved her life from any like millions of things that could have gone wrong in that whole situation. It was the 80s. He's a truck driver. That's not going to last very long. Yeah, it's just a lot of things. This is one of those characters that when I say that we love these kind of characters because it's so easy to see ourselves in that situation, is that, yeah, if I get thrown into a crazy ass situation, I'm going to feel like I'm one of the team, but it's going to be really obvious that I'm not.
I think Jack Burton is one of the best worst heroes of all time, because I feel like Kurt Russell knew. I mean, I know John Carpenter knew, and I've heard the commentary, so I know that they were kind of playing him that way. But I also think they wanted him to appear heroic, even though he doesn't really. You're right. He doesn't do anything until the end with that knife trick, right, where he catches it and throws it back.
He's your perfect bard for the story. And that's what the role really is to be the bard, to be the person that conveys the story to you. And he does a really great job at that.
Oh, he's so good. I think it's Kurt Russell. I mean, I couldn't dislike him in anything. I just couldn't, even if he tried. I still want a sequel to that. Is that sad that he's like, it's 30, 40 years later?
I'd be there opening night.
I'd totally be there.
Oh, man. Oh, he could still do it easily.
All right, also, John. a great movie poster, by the way.
Oh, yes. Fantastic movie poster.
That's a Drew Struzan movie poster.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You're full of surprise. You know all this stuff. Apparently, Drew's the only one that made posters in the 80s.
He made a lot of the posters in the 80s.
Need him back.
He made a lot of the good ones. All right, so my second one, it's you can take it or leave it as far as being the hero of the story or not, but young and old Rose from Titanic. Okay, so... first,
why'd you throw in the ocean, you asshole?
So first, let's go with young Rose. She agrees to marry Kaladin. Kaladin, yeah, all right. You know, Billy Zane, he can play a jerk, but really, the guy is taking on this woman and her entire family to bring them out of financial ruin by doing this marriage. And they get on the boat, and the very first thing she does is fall for the first freaking scumbag American guy who's you know, running around with a sketchbook, guilty, and flirting with girls that way, also guilty. So, and it works. Anyhow... of course, it makes Kaladin look terrible, and it makes him look like a jerk, because here he is. He's doing this great thing by taking this family out of financial ruin by throwing himself at this woman, and she's just like, she's cheating on him already. They just got on the boat. So that makes her a villain. Oh, let's also
before you move on, let's not give him a pass. He's a total douchebag. I don't care. She could bang the whole freaking ship, as far as I'm concerned. That's how big of a douche he is. He picks up a kid, takes a kid away. He's like, oh, I got a kid. He's an awful person. Let's not forget that. I'm not saying you're not wrong about Rose, but come on. Let's all right. stop making him look like he's angelic or something. He's not Angel Paul Walker.
All right. So, but I also, Aaron, I know that you'd be picking up the first kid you'd see and be like, I have a child.
I would pick up two. Yeah, I sure would.
And a puppy.
And a puppy, whatever and I can find. And a puppy. Yeah. These are mine. Call me dad.
Who are you? Shut up. And also, let's not forget the fact that she couldn't even share the door with Jack. Like,
so mad about that.
Now let's switch over to Old Rose. Old Rose has a $250 million necklace. She gets off the boat. She falls in love again because apparently Jack wasn't that important. She has a whole family. She has grandkids, and she managed to like be sneaking away this $250 million necklace. Like it's that's generational money that she could have given to her kids and her grandkids and the grandkids' grandkids. It could have lasted a long ass time. That's the kind of money that you throw in the bank. And like, okay, so Bezos's ex-wife, Mackenzie, I think is her name. She gave away like half of the money that she got from Bezos. So it was like something like $32 billion out of the $50 billion that she got. That was a couple years ago. And the money is already back. Mm. That's the kind of money we're talking about here.
It's a lot of money. Not only that.
It's a lot of money.
She threw it away. It always cracks me up when you watch that movie, because I've seen that movie multiple times, is that she's like, take me out to sea and stuff, and I'll tell you the story. And then, so they spent all the money to fund this operation, to take her out with, to take Granny Bucks all the way out in the middle of the ocean. And then she throws the only thing they've been looking for into the ocean on their boat that they spent all that money to take her old wrinkly ass out to. So she is awful. She couldn't share the door. She doesn't care about poor Bill Paxton and his financial obligations. You know, he's going to look like a failure because he never found that stupid thing. It's awful. You're right. She's an awful person.
And she's evil about it, too, because she just like, whoops, and throws it in the water.
Because guess what? Jack isn't down there. He's not waiting for this thing. It's not some magical amulet that's going to make him Aquaman. He's dead. He's so dead because you killed him. You took the door. You murdered him. Why would he want your stupid? It's just making me so mad. You're a good call.
You know, I think the ending of Titanic would have been so much better if you followed the heart of the ocean and it just went down and landed in Jack Skeleton's hand.
The corpse. His corpse. Oh, my God.
I kind of got distracted because now all I can see is John on the Ho cruise running around the ship with his sketchbook. Asking if he can draw someone like his French girls.
Draw me like your French girl, Jack.
Don't be jealous. That's my game.
And the only thing that would have made it better is if Bill Paxton came up, saw her throw that in the ocean and pushed her ass in. And then she drowned and sank right down to where she murdered her boyfriend.
Right. That'd be the best.
Although I really kind of wish that we did see that thing hit the bottom and his corpse just lands right in his hand.
He has the most annoyed look on his face the entire time.
And he's covered with a door that sank on top of him. That's actually what killed him. It crushed him. Good call. My second one is more recent, but it really annoyed the shit out of me, even though I liked the movie. Claire and Owen from Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. You know, I get that none of the humans have been particularly smart in this entire franchise, right? They're always doing the dumbest things because you're not going to get a cool monster movie if you don't. But in the last sequel, Fallen Kingdom, after a world where all of those horrific things that dinosaurs have done is very well documented, we know this because Jeff Goldblum shows up. So they're aware of all the horrible things dinosaurs have done. They basically use the guise of being PETA warriors or something to unleash them on the unsuspecting population where most certainly people will be slaughtered as a result. That's what they did and painted themselves as being heroic. We're doing it for the dinosaurs. It's not fair that they're going to be sold off and they're going to be tortured and da-da-da-da. You're right. It's better that they kill your fellow human beings in the wild. It's such an awful, awful thing. And that one, it just still nags at me. And I think they're actually addressing that one in the third movie, but still. I mean,
I really hope it's going to be a full-on dinosaur apocalypse, and everyone's hunting them because they released them into the wild. That'd be
they're hunting Clarence Owen. That's great. That's why Sam Neill's back. He's like, we need to kill them. These idiots.
Right.
And Jeff Goldblum's like, yes, must go faster, must kill them faster. Yes.
That's why everybody's back, because they're like, you know what? These idiots keep on doing the worst thing possible. We have to come back now. We have to come back out of retirement. I got my own cane with a freaking amber mosquito on it. I'm going to use that to whack the crap out of these kids.
All right. Back to you, Stan. Who's your third one?
My third is from a movie that's in the running for my all-time favorite movie, and it's Luke Skywalker from The Empire Strikes Back. There's an argument to be made that Luke didn't do much in Return of the Jedi, but if you look at Empire from start to finish, Luke is not heroic at all. He, you know, gets knocked down by a Tauntaun. He nearly gets Han killed because of that. You know, he crashes his speeder in the battle. He knocks down one AT-AT. That seems to be his one good thing. But then he abandons his friends to go find Yoda. He disrespects Yoda from basically start to beginning. He fails in the cave. Then he directly disobeys his master to go off and, you know, basically put everybody that's in Cloud City at risk. At no point does he do the right thing. And he's still the lead of the movie. So Luke he's just it's failure after failure after failure in Empire Strikes Back. And again, one of my all-time, if not my all-time favorite film.
I know Brian Lowry in our Facebook group has made a huge case for Luke Skywalker being a bad hero as well. I don't know if I can subscribe to that, because isn't he kind of a guy that's in learning? I mean, he's learning to be a hero. I mean, wouldn't that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, and even when he defies instruction, you know, Yoda tells him, well, you could get your friends killed if you do this. And he's like, I'm going anyway. And what happens? He nearly gets his friends killed.
It's kind of true. It's kind of true.
I mean, I'm on the side of like Aaron, like where Aaron is. Like he's bad at it because he went from being a farm boy to a hero in 2 seconds, and now he's got to learn how to do all those things without any sort of like real formal training or any real formal access to the books or anything else like that. So yeah, I mean, he's terrible, but that's one of the things that made him great as a hero, because he made it okay to not only be a hero, but be bad at it.
And maybe that's why I love the movie so much, because it is, you know, he becomes more relatable because of that. But, you know, we're talking about heroes that aren't very heroic, and it's definitely Luke in Empire.
I mean, I can see the argument. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can see where your argument's coming from. And I mean, he did the right thing. He told Leia that she was his sister once he found out that they made out, and they never talked about that again. It's weird.
Again, that was in Jedi.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But also, like, she instigated it, so.
Well, she didn't know.
Just to make Han jealous.
But they always felt it. That's the thing. I was like, I always felt something. Then why'd you make out with him? I don't understand that. But you're right. Empire is the one you're talking about. So in Empire, you're saying he was a bad hero. Because in the other, okay, all right. If you just separate that movie, which I think you can do, I get your argument. Because in the first movie, he's definitely a hero. He saves billions of people because he blows up the Death Star. He does that.
Oh, he's totally a hero in A New Hope, and you know, he saves Han and
Return of the Jedi,
his friends in Jedi, and then goes off and doesn't have a huge impact. Oh, in
he
the rest of the movie.
He made his daddy feel stuff.
He did.
He got the robot heart pitter pattering.
But it was the rest of the people that destroyed the Death Star, and therefore the Emperor, you know, for a while at least, at the end of Jedi.
Yeah, apparently.
No shade at all thrown there.
Apparently blowing up the Death Star, throwing them, electrocuted, throw them down into a pit, blow it up. None of that stuff kills that guy. He is amazing. What a dumb plot that was. I still like that movie, but it was a dumb plot. God, it was dumb. Poor Rey deserved better.
Indeed.
Good argument. All right, John, who's your third?
All right, so my third and final one for the night to follow in this whole stream that I decided to go with unusual hero choices Happy Gilmore from Happy Gilmore.
Was he a hero? Like, ever? Was he a hero?
Well, yeah. Like, you know, he's a hero of his story, right? Yeah, he's okay. We fall in love with him because he's got this really sweet relationship with his grandma and he takes really good care of her and all these other things. But his temper was ridiculous. And there's at least three occasions where he should have been escorted off the golf course in handcuffs.
Oh, we don't do that. We don't escort people out when they have violent outbursts. I don't know if you heard.
I thought we were moving on.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just saying.
Wow, you made this bad, and I can't go anywhere every single one of my jokes are really not good.
Continue. Happy Gilmore. Why is he not heroic?
I mean, that's it. That's like
his violent outbursts.
His violent outbursts. He's not. He doesn't, you know, do anything right. He does absolutely everything wrong. He gets in a fight with Bob Barker. Who gets in a fight with Bob Barker?
Happy Gilmore does, bitch.
Right. And people were still rooting for him, but that's my third and final choice.
I would make the argument that was the intent. He's more of an anti-hero, but he is the hero of his story, right?
I'm forgetting. Did he end up causing Carl Weathers to die in that movie?
Well, he loses his hand.
But doesn't
no, he was his.
He had lost his hand years before, but I think he died somewhere in the movie.
He does die in the movie. I can't remember where, though.
Doesn't he fall off?
Seems like it's probably Happy's fault.
Doesn't he fall off of...
He falls out a window because Happy found the gator that took his
hand.
That's
what I'm saying. He killed him.
He turned the gator into a gator skin box.
Yeah.
And then popped the box open and there's the gator's head. And that's when Carl Weathers has like a PTSD moment and throws himself out the window.
I think he trips over the fire escape or whatever.
Same difference. I saw it both ways.
Funny. You're right. He's a horrible person with a great golf swing. All right. My third one is Ned Stark from Game of Thrones. Ned Stark. He's prideful, right? But I don't know how many people have told me he's the only hero on the show. He's the only hero. He's really the only hero on the show. Forget, you know, all the other Stark boys and Arya and everybody else. Ned Stark's the only real one with any decency and pride. Well, here's what pride gets you. Everyone praises Ned Stark, most honorable, real hero, blah, 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 blah. Really? If he just played the stupid game or declined the king's request, his whole family would still be living their best lives right now. He basically got everybody murdered and separated. He's dumb. Instead, he chose honor and pride and literally lost his head. It caused a war that his son and his wife lost their lives over. Another son was killed because he can't zigzag. That kid was killed while they were trying to kill another one of his kids. His daughter's basically sold off and abused. His other daughter was so traumatized, she became an assassin. His other son handicapabled himself all over Westeros on the run. And then basically led to the deaths of numerous family members, most of the direwolves, and led directly to everything that happened in the show. So everything that happened in the show is really Ned Stark's fault, if you think about it. He sucks.
I can't argue that fact. That's actually very solid points. If he would have just like stayed home, he would have been good.
Exactly. Drives me nuts.
The case for agoraphobia.
We all understand now, right? I mean, the last 2 years has taught us anything. It's that home's not bad. I like home.
Don't be like Ned. Stay home.
Don't be like Ned. You don't want to be decapitated. That's not cool. Oh, God. It drives me nuts. I've got Brian, friend of the show. He's constantly like, Ned Stark, he's really a hero. He was honorable. I'm like, he got everyone killed. It's his fault. This whole show, even the final season, is really Ned Stark's fault. If you hated it.
Right. If you loved it, it's not his fault.
Exactly. Oh, that's funny. Stan, any honorable mentions that you want to?
I have a few. I think that he wasn't the central character. Peter Quill in Infinity War, you know, he kind of led to the snap. Simba in The Lion King. Cobb, Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Inception. He was a terrible hero.
Hang on, I want to back up. Simba in The Lion King.
Yeah.
Explain, please.
Well, you know, he runs away. He was perfectly content just to sort of lead a bohemian lifestyle on the other side of the kingdom, you know, just sort of growing his hair out, being a hippie with his new buddies. And it's Nala that's actually the hero. You know, she's the one that comes out with a purpose and drags his ass back to Pride Rock. You know, he even did that pretty reluctantly.
That's a good point. I never even thought about Simba being a hero. That's not very good call. That's interesting. And yeah, you're right. Cobb, Inception, he's not a good.
No, he's terrible. Well acted. Probably deserves an Oscar. Terrible.
He's probably still bitter from being drowned by Rose. Right, what that was. John, any honorable mentions from you?
No, I don't have a single one.
I want to mention Mrs. Doubtfire because seriously, we're just okay with fathers literally stalking their children and breaking into their ex-wife's house because he makes a bitching nanny impression. I don't why are we laughing at this? This is not cool. This is one of the most horrible freaking scenarios I've ever seen in a movie before. And I know a lot of people have made the joke, you know, if you just change the music and it's a horror movie, and they're not wrong. And that's why it's also funny. Yes, but also so true. He is not a hero. He's not the dad I want any poor child to have.
Those kids will need so much therapy.
Oh my God. Oh, he would lose any kind of hesitation. He would never be able to see his kids. No judge would understand. Oh, he's a performer. It's okay.
No, he's a stalker.
I've talked about it before, but Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett from Bad Boys, they are the worst cops in United States history. They break every single law multiple times.
Well, let's just be okay with that because that's how cops do, right?
Oh, Jesus. Jesus. I got nothing. Okay, we're just going to tiptoe past that one and whip out some listener
picks. That's John at the Hollywood Outsider. Go ahead. Yeah. Look for me. Look me up. That's all right.
I think is it John or our John? I don't even remember anymore.
I don't remember either. That's probably one of the reasons why I can't hook it back up again.
All right, we've got some listener comment, a few listener picks. David Billups says, Ash from The Evil Dead. He was just trying to get laid. I mean, the first movie, I think Ash was a real hero. You know, or he's trying to be a real hero. He's trying to fight the evil. After that, I concur. He was just a dimble. He's like the worst hero in horror movie history.
I don't know. I'm pretty torn on that. Like it's. I don't know about him just trying to get laid because as soon as it started getting pretty scary out there, there was no action below the waist for him. I mean, if there was, then there's something wrong with him.
Maybe Army of Darkness. Give me some sugar, baby.
Well, by that point, like the PTSD is taken over to the point to such a degree that he's just like, I'm comfortable in this craziness now.
Fair enough.
No, he's just an inept hero in Army of Darkness. You know, can't remember one single line.
Nickel.
Okay, I'm just going to take this book here now.
Nate Bruce, this one might fall more in the anti-hero, but I get his point. Dominic Toretto, criminal who took down criminal organizations but broke every law to do it.
I'm going to go with anti-hero. Like he started out more of an anti-hero, and I guess now he's more of a hero.
Now he's a superhero. I mean, they go to space, dude.
Yeah.
So just give him a cape. Give him a cape says F for family on the back or whatever.
I still haven't seen it.
What?
Not a one of them. Why? Just start with Fast Five. You don't even need to see the rest of them. Just start with Fast Five.
I'll put it on my Netflix DVD queue.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, actually, he needs to start with Four. So from Four on.
Yeah, Four kind of explains Five, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They keep adding more and more to HBO Max. So I've brought it up. I've tried to watch the first one a couple of times, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
You only need to watch the first one once.
Have you seen Point Break? You've seen Point Break, right?
Oh, yeah.
You've seen the first one. It's literally a remake.
Yeah.
So I've heard.
Andreas, he says, Ragnar Lothbrok in Vikings. Lots of Vikings at the tables of Valhalla because of his decisions, which is, you know, Viking heaven. And he's right. I watched that show not too long ago, and my God, he got a lot of people killed.
I'm in the middle of the second season, so
never mind.
I can see that happening.
he actually saves a lot of people. I mean, he is an amazing hero. sorry.
It's been on for like 10 years. I have no excuses.
Oops. Oh, here's a famous one. Jennifer Miller, Daniel LaRusso in the Karate Kid movie. Illegal kick to win, but held up as the hero of the movie.
This was very true because of all the reasons that you can think of. I mean, Johnny was just doing Johnny things and being cool and just trying to ride his dirt bike on the beach. And of course, this freaking little skinny bastard from Jersey shows up, and Johnny's girlfriend, you know, is Twitter-pated by some little twerpy dude.
Twitter-pated?
Who's in Jersey. I mean, who wants
Twitter-pated?
Twitter-pated. Yes. Don't stop me when I'm in the middle of a rant. I'm trying to
figure out what the word meant. I'm sorry. Continue. I'll figure it out later.
Figure it out later. Anyhow, she's all over friggin' stupid twerpy guy from Jersey. And then, of course, like Johnny is going to be left out and made to look like the evil guy. And then, of course, he doesn't even do the whole sweep the leg thing, and he gets kicked in the face. So, yeah, I get it.
I mean, if he hadn't done the illegal kick, he would have been put in a body bag. So, I'll defend Daniel.
Yeah.
Here.
I'm gonna be the outlier and say it wasn't an illegal kick. It was a legal kick. They covered it. Go back and rewatch it. They covered it. So I'm sorry Johnny has trauma that he was a dick, but it made for a great show that I love. So I'm good with it. And apparently he Twitter baited somebody, which is fascinating to me because I still don't know what that word means. What does Twitter bait mean? Explain it to me because you're done with your rant. Is that just an accidental...
Twitter pated. It's okay. So you don't watch cartoons,
but
Twitter
pated
is. Yeah. It was brought up in Bambi.
Twitter pated. Okay.
Twitter pated was brought up in Bambi. It was when they were describing what it's like during mating season.
And what does Twitter pated mean?
Twitter pated means they want to go to Pound Town.
Why didn't you say Pound Town? At least something I could understand. Fuck, I don't.
I was trying to keep it clean.
I'm sorry, I don't know Bambi porn names. I've never heard that description before.
I'm gonna go raw dog some fauna now. So
it's Latin for horny,
right?
I guess in Disney it is. Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna end on open mic night here in a second, but before we get there, I do want to say thank you for listening. Please share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook. We're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please share the show with your friends, tell your friends, rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws. Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk is where you can find Amanda, and at Sink Into This. Troy is on The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld and at Troy Heinrichs, and I'm on Presenting Hitchcock and The Blacklist Exposed, and I'm at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. Also, wanted to give a shout out to another podcast called Erotic Awakening, which talks about all kinds of naughty things. And apparently they recently gave our podcast a shout out, which was greatly appreciated. Really, really do appreciate that. You're listening to the podcast, you're enjoying the podcast, and that you mentioned it on your Erotic Awakening podcast. And for that, I will gladly choke John out tonight in a sexy way.
Sweet. Can you make sure you spit on it? But how did we get brought up?
Go listen to Erotic Awakening, and you can hear about it. They were talking about podcasts that they've been listening to, and they recommended The Hollywood Outsider. I assume the ones you weren't on.
It's probably likely, because I'm the one who says words like Twitter-pated.
I think they would use Twitter-pated. On their show, right. It would make a lot of sense.
Well, I'm going to go have to go check them out because they were sweet enough to bring us up. And I'm sure they have no appreciation for my sort of humor whatsoever.
Oh, just kidding. I'm sure that they love you quite a bit because you say dirty, naughty things all the time.
That's
Stan,
true.
Open mic night. This is where you could talk about any topic or discussion point you want to. What do you want to talk about before we close the show up?
I want to talk about the length of movies lately. I don't do a lot of social media, but I do hear a lot of people talking about movie lengths, and I understand that there was actually a Saturday Night Live skit about
the
short-ass movies. A lot of the big movies over the past year have been really long. There's several movies that I haven't seen just because of the length and not because I don't want to watch them. It's just, we got to find the time. So it does seem that movies are a little more okay being, 2.5 plus hours. I mean, we've got The Batman that was amazing, but it's a 3-hour movie. When you clock in previews and commercials, I mean, that's a 4-hour plus outing just to go see a movie. But, you know, I wanted to talk about long movies. Do you love them? Do you hate them? And why is it okay to binge half a season of Bridgerton, but not sit down and watch a 2.5-hour movie? So
that's an excellent point. And thanks for bringing Pete Davidson up, because we need to give him more power.
I haven't seen it. I just heard about it.
Well, apparently it was so well received that Netflix actually added a short-ass movies category. I don't know if it's still there, or they did after that came out. Because he was saying anything, movies got to be under 100 minutes or something like that, I think was the tagline. So it's a bunch of movies that are under 100 minutes. John, how do you feel about long? Because it's a good point. I mean, in terms of, people will bitch about a really long movie, but they'll sit down and they'll binge watch an entire show in an afternoon.
Yeah, I've never considered myself one of the people who gets worried about how long a movie is, with the exception of, like, depending on how late in the evening it is, because I'm old now. But when I decide I'm going to sit down and watch it, I almost like longer movies better than shorter ones, just because they have the ability of taking their time, and they have the ability of telling a much more complete and layered story. Whereas some of the shorter ones tend to cram so much in such a short span that sometimes you're scratching your head wondering what happened. But then again, you get a good, skillful director and writer behind it, you're probably going to be fine no matter what the length is. So I think the synopsis of what I'm trying to say is I don't care.
Fair enough. Pace matters, obviously. I mean, you got to, like, The Batman, great movie, but it could have been, what, half hour shorter easily, I think. If you really,
I'll find out next week.
Oh, well, Stan and I have seen it. Do you want to know what happens? Do you want to know who? Because
who's Batman?
It is Robert Pattinson. I couldn't believe it either.
Oh,
it's crazy.
You mean the vampire guy?
Literally, he's a bat.
He's a sparkly Batman. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be awesome if he did? If he shimmered at some scene, somebody should have shot that. Damn you, Matt Reeves! Why didn't you make that happen? You know, I always prefer movies, always. You know, people, I love how the TV, da, da, da. Yeah, I do too, but I like a story to end at some point. And unfortunately, TV today seems to never want to end. So, you know, and I feel like a lot of stories are too fleshed out. There's a lot of story. Inventing Anna, it was a really interesting story that deserved no more than 2 episodes, period. It could have been a movie easily. I couldn't even finish it because it was too long. It was way too long. It was just the story was drug out because they had an 8-episode order. So they made it 8 episodes. I prefer a movie. I like getting to the point. I think the time doesn't matter to me as much, but I do think there's some stories that need to be synced. Duel, which I talked about earlier. That's very much a story that shouldn't be longer than 1.5 hours, and it's not. Like John said, I mean, it could even be a short, you know, and then you have stories like, you know, The Batman, I think, is really telling a very detailed story. So I got why that one was so big. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which is a fantastic movie that just came out. That's, you know, a little bit too long, but it's still, I mean, there's a lot of story there. Like, the weight is there to justify the length. I'm okay with those. Do I prefer shorter? As long as it works. Morbius was short and it wasn't good. So short doesn't always equal a good movie either. Sometimes you need more time to flesh things out. So either way, it's just good story, good filmmaking. That's what I care most about. But I'll take a movie over a TV show any day. What do you say, Stan? I mean, it's your kind of topic. Where do you land on this?
No, I'm with you, but I do think that I will, if I see a movie that's over, you know, probably 2 hours and 15, 2 hours, 20 minutes, I'm going to be a little more cautious about how I approach it. Sure. I'm going to listen to reviews and recommendations, and because it's one of the strange things about getting older. Time moves much more quickly. 3 hours is a big chunk of my day, and I want it to be well spent. So, you know, and there are just evenings where, you know, like John said, I'm old, I got to go to bed, and it's, do I watch Lawrence of Arabia or do I watch an episode of Vikings? And so I'm a little less ready to jump into a long movie, even though I love them. Like a good long movie, I'm in. I don't look away. But it's just, I approach them a little differently. And there are times where I have found myself looking through, I'm like, well, how long is this one? Okay, I've got time to watch it.
Yeah, I do that quite a bit too. Actually, now, when you put it in that context, I do know for a fact that if I don't know what it is, like if I don't already want to see it really bad for some reason, you know, like, okay, so you're fumbling through Netflix or Amazon or wherever you're looking, right? And you're just trying to find something to watch. I will look at the runtime. And if it's, you know, over an hour and 40, I'm not going to take as many chances on something that's too long. So if it's like, I can't tell you how many times I've seen something that was like 2 hours and 20 minutes and it looked like a good movie. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'll just keep going until I find something a little shorter. Probably spend just as much time trying to find something. So I guess in that context, I'm with you in that respect because I have passed on a bunch of movies that I didn't know well enough or hadn't been recommended, just saw in the queues and thought, well, that might be interesting. Then you see the runtime, you're like, not that interesting.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, I think there's, you know, all the big comic book movies lately have all been going 2.5 hours plus, and they're the most successful movies out there. And yet there's a lot of blowback and people are, you know, the short ass movies, they're becoming, people are talking about the length of movies in a way that I haven't heard in the past. Even though the biggest movies out there are getting longer and longer. So I just kind of find that sort of interesting.
Yeah. John, do you ever do that? Since you don't care. Do you ever see a runtime and say, no, which is how I say no, by the way.
You say, no. What is that from? Clue.
What is that from, you terrorist? Jesus.
I knew it was from something because you're not original. Anyhow. Wow.
You're the only one laughing.
I don't care. I it's funny. Anyhow, I don't get much of those, you know? Anyhow, do I look at the run times and go, yeah. Yeah, sometimes I do, depending on, like I said, depending on the time of day it is. If it's a school night and I gotta wake up and be functional in the morning, then no, I'm not watching something that's gonna be 2 hours long. If it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and it's a school night, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Why not? Also, there's this great thing called stop, where you can just stop the movie, go to bed or something. If it's not gonna keep my attention long enough for me to be like, I can risk it, I can risk being tired tomorrow, I can just stop it, get ready for bed, go to sleep, wake up the next day, go do my thing, and then pick it up where I left off.
Like you it's would okay. A Netflix show. Same difference.
Right. Same difference.
I will tell you, Stan, I do hate when people tell me it's too long a movie if you recommend it to somebody. And they're like, it's too long. And you know for a damn fact that they will sit on their ass and watch TV all day long. That's so annoying. It's like,
it really is.
Yeah. No, you definitely got to see this movie. Oh, that's really long, man.
That's too long.
You just watch 8 episodes of NCIS. Like, that's not benefiting your life. I promise you. Ugh.
So what do you think it is about, what's the difference? You know, what compels people to be able to watch 3 or 4 episodes of television back to back to back, but they can't sit down and watch a 2.5 hour movie?
It's the hint of being able to pause the story, or at least the optical illusion of being able to find a perfectly good place to break the
perfect
story
breaks.
So that you can go to the bathroom and you can go get something to eat or have Uber Eats delivered, get some Nookie or whatever it takes. Like, you know, I mean, after 4 hours of sitting there watching something all day, you're probably not getting any Nookie because you probably stink pretty bad. But <it's->
I mean, people shower and watch TV too, John.
Not when it comes to binging sometimes. Sometimes that whole thing just like, I'm just going to sit here and fester in my sweat all day long.
What just happened? Netflix and
I got
fester.
A weird
Netflix and yeah. Fester. Oh.
I got a weird itch someplace and it's all because of Netflix and sweat.
You know, that actually does make sense. I mean, I don't have any psychological study to back it up or anything, but we don't need those anymore because I just make up facts. So, yeah, that seems like a very scientific fact. Breaks.
Yeah.
And plus, I really feel people are just, of the current modern society, don't want anybody else's opinion on anything. They want to just make all decisions based on whatever they believe. So they're going to watch what they want, as long as they want, when they want, how they want, and they don't want to hear you complain about it. So stop bringing it up, Stan.
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to sit here with my ringworm, watching whatever I want for as long as possible.
God. All right. On ringworm.
Which isn't a ring or a worm.
I think good time. Stan, unless you had something else you wanted to follow up on that, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask John if he needed a cream.
Yeah, he can get you a prescription.
Yeah, that'll be great. I really appreciate it. Can you do that in the mail? Like,
I don't think it works like that. You'd still have to examine your funk and filth.
Well, here, let's take a look. It's right here next to the sack.
All right. On that note, it's time to go. Stan, thanks for being here. Appreciate it every time you come by. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And John, sometimes it's a pleasure. All right. Well, remember, everybody, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
My computer just stopped recording for a couple seconds.
Well, we're still recording, so I'll use this track. It's fine.
Yeah, okay. Mark that down.
Oh, thanks. I'll do that. I was just going to leave that in. Let that roll. I'm sure everybody would love to hear about your technical issues. Do you think it's because you started recording, like, whenever you started recording, or what?
No, I'm pretty sure my dad might be doing something upstairs.
Why don't you just go yell at him?
It's his fucking house.
Exactly.
He's already annoyed because his girlfriend won't come over here anymore.
Why? What do you like, sit there and watch them have sex? Or
so much for the rich doctor, huh?
I thought all doctors were filthy rich. I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah,
that's a lot of school for nothing.
You know, I roll around in a pile of ones every so often.
Is it to the soundtrack of Striptease or something?
Oh, God, please.
Aaron's going to ask me to take another month-long break now.
Just to get that checked.
Jesus. He's going to be like, God, this version of John, nobody likes. It's time to go ahead and, like, maybe take a break, pal.
Is it supposed to ooze like a volcano like that? I don't think that's normal.